From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nandi. Tom Sherwood, he's our resident analyst. He's a reporter with NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers. Hey, Tom.
Hey, good afternoon.
Also in studio with us is Jack Evans. He is a D.C. council member representing Ward 2. He's also chair of the Metro Board of Directors, chair of the Council's Committee on Finance and Revenue. He serves on the Committee on Transportation and the Environment and the Committee of the on the Judiciary. Jack Evans, good to see you.
Great to be here, Kojo. Thanks.
Later in the broadcast, we'll be talking with Montgomery County Executive Ike Leggett. But first, Tom, Virginia online registration has been extended in Virginia because last week on the final day of online voter registration, the site crashed. There was a complaint filed. There was a lawsuit filed, actually. And the governor, Terry McAuliffe, also asked a federal judge to intervene. The federal judge has now ordered the immediate reopening of voter registration. It's open until 11:59 p.m. today.
Right. Regular people would say until midnight.
Well, 11:59. You know,
11:59. And yes, that was a good thing. You know, the good news is people are trying to register to vote. I mean, people should vote. I mean, this is an interesting, exciting, important election. People want to vote. Everything should be done to make it easier for people to register to vote. I don't think Virginia has same-day registration. In fact, I'd be willing to bet they don't. But, you know, people, I mean, I don't know why we don't have voting on Saturdays and just, you know, make sure that people get out and vote. And so it was good that they had technical problems and they extended it to Friday. I think some of the people wanted it extended to Monday or Tuesday of next week.
Well, we have same day registration and voting in the District of Columbia, and early voting in the district starts tomorrow. On Saturday. It expands to every ward after October 28th. Any eligible voter can cast a ballot at one judiciary square from Saturday, October 22nd through Sunday, November 4th, between 8:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. And those with valid proof of residency can register to vote on the same day they cast their ballots. That in today's edition of the Washington Post. So there we've said it.
Right.
If you have questions or comments for Jack Evans, call us at 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Watch the live video stream there or ask a question or comment. Jack Evans, on Tuesday, you and your colleagues voted to accept the D.C. Constitution, largely drafted by Mayor Bowser's office, about the name. The council scrapped New Columbia as a possibility. It's my understanding that you propose the alternative, State of Washington, D.C., Washington Douglas Commonwealth. However, the other Washington state has taken issue with that proposal.
Well, I don't know why they would. I mean, there are many jurisdictions, states that share common names. We'll start with Virginia and West Virginia. And you have
Dakotas.
I was going to say, exactly. You got them all. So we are Washington, D.C. We're not Washington State. Actually, when you think of Washington, most people think of Washington, D.C. and not Washington State. So, but they can both coexist. And the value of having Washington, D.C. is everybody knows us and we don't have to change anything. You know, in the mail system, we were known as D.C. and everywhere else where you have Washington, D.C. as the nomenclature. Because we will be now the state of Washington, D.C., it fits very perfectly.
So well, you I'm can go to our website, kojoshow.org, where you will see how Tom Sherwood has responded to the accusations from people in the state of Washington, in the Seattle Times and on KUOW, our sister station there, saying that we should not have that name. And what, in brief, did you say, Tom?
I can't say.
No, there were no profanities.
The summary of the argument, other than bragging about Washington State, and I don't mind him doing that, yeah. The summary of the argument is horrible Washington, D.C., the seat of the Congress, all the national federal government stuff that people complain about bitterly all the time. And I just said briefly, that conflates, that columnist, like people across America, conflate official Washington with the people who live here. The people who live here in the most un-American city in America, the nation's capital. We don't have the right to vote. We don't have a right to decide our own affairs. And we're just, we need to end that. And that's the difference. That's what I told him. You ought to pay attention to what our real situation is. Don't punish us because the White House and the Congress can't get along.
I'm basically told him to get with the program.
Yeah, right. And frankly, the name New Columbia was ridiculous. I was here in 82 when they came up with it, and it seemed to make sense back then. But why would we name our new state after Christopher Columbus? I mean, that's absurd. So, I mean, we are Washington, D.C., and when states are admitted to the Union...
Do we really want to get into names of Redskins?
We get to raise up Frederick Douglass in the new name. So
yes.
For those of you who didn't know...
And don't misspell it. It takes two S's on the end of his name.
Frederick Douglass lived here from 1877 to his death in 1895.
Recorder of deeds. He had a number of great jobs. Here, yes.
In just over 2 weeks, residents will vote on whether to approve both the name and the draft of a D.C. constitution, but the council voted to move forward with a constitutional convention. That's important for a lot of people who've criticized the lack of residents' input. How would this constitutional convention work, Jack?
Well, within, I believe, 2 years after we become a state, the convention would be called. And in many ways, the Constitution we pass is like a placeholder, and then the Constitution Convention can then take the document we passed and adjust it accordingly if they want to make any changes to it, and then come up with a new Constitution based on the one we passed. So it gives the people much more input. There was a lot of complaints that this was rushed and done too quickly, so this would correct that problem.
Well, the mayor just wanted to have a non-controversial Absolutely. Constitution to take to Congress
Sure.
in the unlikely chance that Congress actually votes on this.
Yeah.
But one of the big issues in getting this passed was whether or not the people could change the Constitution subject to a veto or a revision by the elected legislature.
Mm-hmm.
What was the final decision? If the people have the Constitutional Convention in 2 years, does it go to the people for ratification,
yes.
or does it go to the legislature where it may make changes?
No, it does not come back to the legislature.
So the legislature can't make constitutional
Correct.
Changes without taking them to the...
Yeah, and so the way to make a change, we would have to get two-thirds vote of the council or the legislature at that time, and then go to the people to get whatever change we're recommending ratified.
Because one of the bigger problems, with people say in the 1980s, the Constitution then was drafted as the most liberal document on the face of the earth,
right.
and that you could have a Constitution guaranteeing... as we do now, guaranteeing shelter, but guaranteeing income, and you could be in a real fix.
Yeah, and that's what happened in 82. So I have to say, my position was not in support of what we just discussed. I believe it should have come back to the legislature in order to make any final changes, but that was not successful. Most of my colleagues believed that the people should have the final say. And Tom, what you pointed out is, you know, the concern everybody has. What if the people decide, and people kind of vote for anything, what if they decide that the Constitution should have a provision that every person should, which our original one did, every person should have a job with the government? How do you undo that?
It's not going to pass Congress anyway, is it?
Well, by then would be a state.
I mean, right now.
If we got control, who knows what will happen to the Congress after
November.
No, the hope is if Hillary really wins big and captures the House and the Senate, we really have a shot then.
A lot of Democrats don't like this idea either.
On to issues of Metro. Be forewarned,
Metro.
You're not supposed to consume food on Metro, so don't get caught with a lollipop and a bag of chips like an 18-year-old at the Columbia Heights station was yesterday and found herself apparently tripped up by Metro security officers when she refused to sit down at their demand and charged with illegal entry into Metro charges that were eventually dropped. There seemed like an excessive use of force there, but it's being investigated. We have to move on to the larger issues. You want to comment on the lollipop and the bag of chips?
The video shows that the police did use a tactic to make someone sit down. It's not like they assaulted or attacked her. You can say it was tough, but it looked like a basic police move when someone is not cooperating and this person wasn't cooperating. So this requires more discussion. We've asked for an investigation. We'll see what happens with it.
You and fellow Metro board members Jack Evans, along with General Manager Paul Wiedefeld, held a marathon public hearing yesterday on late night service. He got an earful, including protesters, especially testimony from you and others. And, of course, the big issue, of course, was whether or not Metro should remain open late, and there's a whole lot to go into. You went into it for 9.5 hours yesterday. What I found most significant was your comment saying, nobody likes any idea.
Yeah, actually. That's right. Yeah.
That's the impression I get. What was the main issue here?
Yeah, the main issue is the late night hours. Currently, the current law for Metro is we stay open till 3 o'clock in the morning on Friday night, 3 o'clock in the morning Saturday night, and midnight on Sunday. Under a special dispensation, we've given our general manager the ability to change those hours during SafeTrack. So right now we close at midnight, Friday, midnight, Saturday, and his suggestion would be 10 o'clock on Sunday. And he wants to make that permanent. So just so you understand the process, as soon as SafeTrack ends in April, we go back to the 3 o'clock in the morning. The only way that can be changed is by a vote of the board. Metro has a jurisdictional veto on votes. So if Corbett Price, my alternate on my colleague on the board, and I vote not to change anything, you know, we vote against any changes, it goes back to 3 o'clock in the morning. Why is 3 important? Because in the district, it's very different from when Metro started years ago. District has a vibrant nightlife now. And so consequently, our bars stay open till 2 o'clock in the morning on Friday and Saturday. You have, in addition to patrons who use these establishments, the people who clean them, the people who take care of them and work in them. We have a nightlife of employees who need ways to get home. And largely the testimony yesterday, Kojo, was from people like that who said, Metro's my only alternative. And even substituting the bus doesn't work. People said, I'm afraid of waiting for the bus. I want to take the rail. It's faster, cleaner, safer. Everything. So we need to keep the rail open as it was till 3 o'clock in the morning.
The big question is whether we're going to have a metro system or a rush hour system where we're just going to take people to work in the morning and bring them home at night and then shut down. You know, like we are a sleepy southern city.
Yeah.
It just seems ludicrous. But one of the big issues I reported on this week is that D.C. wants Maryland and Virginia to pony up more money or some kind of dedicated funding source.
Using a sales tax?
Yeah.
Sales tax or something, so everybody will be on the same page.
Right.
You know, Aubrey Lane, I spoke to him yesterday, the Secretary of Transportation for Virginia. He says, we want to see improvements, then we'll discuss money.
Okay.
Yeah. So it seems to me you guys are in a no-win situation, and the metro is going to spiral down, and it has to get worse before anybody does anything.
Yeah, it's just to explain the dedicated funding source again, there are only 5 other transit systems in America like us. You have the 4 old ones, you know, Chicago, Boston, Philadelphia, New York. They were started in the 1800s, and then you have San Francisco, BART, and then us. All those other 5, including, if you want to add to it, Atlanta, Miami, and L.A., all have a dedicated funding source of a 1% sales tax. So that's why I'm pushing that, not because I like or dislike sales taxes. It's the easiest one to administer, and everybody else has one. And so if you had that for us, we could raise $500 million from the region and really have enough money to backstop all of the capital improvements that we want to make. Now, Virginia is taking the position. It's kind of a ludicrous position anyway, the chicken and the egg. Show us some results and we'll give you the money. Conveniently for them, by the time we show the results in a year, the McAuliffe administration will be long gone. They're out of office. So they can actually not do anything and not take any of the blame. And the Hogan administration, they're up for re-election a year from now. So that's a problem. All I can say to everybody, come July 1st, which I told you yesterday, July 1st is the beginning of our new fiscal year. If we don't have the funds to run this system, we are going to have to make severe cutbacks, running much less bus service, not stopping during non-rush hour at many metro stops, largely in the outer jurisdictions. And I don't want to get there. So the residents...
Who makes that decision? Excuse me for interrupting, but can the general manager say, all right, we're going to cut back on train service because we can't afford it, so therefore the Silver Line will not run...
And then everybody ends up blaming him for the problem.
Yeah, it would be our general manager.
Can he make that decision? Do you have to have a vote on it?
No. He can make the decision, you know, about how to run service depending on the money.
But if you don't run buses and you don't run services on the train, would the employee still get paid?
Well, that's something we're looking into now, is how do you cut back? Because they have union contracts. So how do you save money? You could sort of save it on fuel, but that's not, you know, that's a de minimis compared to everything. So it's something we're really looking into, is how do we afford a system if the jurisdictions refuse to pay?
What's next?
What's next?
Disaster.
No, it's not disaster. It could be disaster.
I'll quote Trump. It's a disaster.
I'm going to, myself and my colleagues on the board and the general manager, we're going to spend a lot of time showing the region how Metro is improving, and it is, and why it's important for the jurisdictions to support with their finances. Metro, we're going to have
Jeffrey DeWitt, the CFO for the city, has come up with a
great
describe.
Plan.
It's a
yeah.
very, it, you know,
very
from
well
Arizona. He doesn't have any long term
yeah.
issue here.
Yeah, but we're going to have our budget is going to be presented by our general manager in November. It's going to have a $275 million shortfall, and there will be suggestions to raise fares, cut service, do everything, steal money from the capital fund and use operating dollars, sell assets, all kind of crazy ideas.
And that's when you'll find out again that nobody likes any ideas.
Yes.
And this is a situation where we will have to have more deterioration in Metro before anything is done.
Yeah, it really is.
Hopefully
that's going to happen.
I'd like to get to some other issues and legislation before the D.C. Council right now. The Council moved forward with the Death with Dignity Act, a contentious, emotional issue. A majority of the Council support the legislation, but it's unclear whether Mayor Bowser does, and opponents have promised to pressure Congress to strike it down in case it does become law. What are the prospects, and what do you say to those opponents who fear that it's aimed at communities of color?
The prospects, I think, are good. I think the votes are on the city council to pass it. I don't know the mayor's position on it. I would be surprised if she were to veto it or something of that nature, but there may be even 9 votes on the council. Who knows? I doubt Congress would get involved in this. They've shown a reluctance to get involved in district issues lately. So,
and more importantly, the local people in Washington, it's a very it's a bad thing for people in Washington to go to Congress where we don't have a vote to get it to overturn things that we do here in the city. So who's
that
suggesting
happening.
That they might go to Congress? I mean, that's a non-starter.
Yeah.
A lot of people threaten that, but I don't think they understand politics of that.
If Congress didn't react to marijuana and gay marriage, they're not going to react to Death with Dignity. That's not going to happen. Yeah. So I think it'll pass and become the law in the district. And, everyone can make arguments about how something can be abused. I think those can be dispelled, that it won't be used against people of color or people who shouldn't be
experiencing this. One more second on this. One person said who was opposed to this said the problem is people who get a terminal diagnosis may become depressed, and they don't know, they're not thinking as clearly. An unscrupulous family member persuades them who's looking to be inherit the money or something like that. There's just so many uncertainties.
Yeah.
But then other people say, look, it's my life. I control my body. It's my life, and it's my death.
Yeah, yeah. And so there are always going to be anecdotal stories about why something's bad. That's for everything you ever do, someone will have one of those, and you balance the good and the bad and move forward.
And in Oregon, it's had it since the late 1990s, 1998, I think, and there has been no significant allegation of wrongdoing by
any race. Put on your headphones, please, because we go now to Caroline in Washington, D.C. Caroline, you are on the air. Go ahead, please.
Great. So, Councilman Evans, I am a mother of 3 children, of which 2 go to Hyde Addison Elementary School in Georgetown. And as you know, Hyde is going to be undergoing a 2-year renovation, and we have been told that we are moving over 3 miles away to 11th and Euclid Street, which is further away than any DCDS elementary school has been asked to move for their swing site. And as I understand, is the only swing site that is being proposed that is this controversial, that all have been moved forward with consensus among the parents and the community. And I was asking what you're doing to address this issue and also to keep our project intact and not to have it be cut.
Well, as you know, I've been a strong supporter of the parents at Hyde Addison to go to Hardy. And Hardy should be the swing space. I've had these discussions with the mayor, with Jenny Niles. At a moment in time,
Jenny Niles. Who is that?
Jenny Niles is the deputy mayor for education. And at a moment in time, the mayor actually agreed that Hardy would work. I believe Jenny Niles convinced her then it wouldn't work, and they changed their position. They are coming out to the community, I believe, November 1st or 2nd. And I think the community needs to come out in droves to let the mayor and Ms. Niles know that this is just an unacceptable resolution. I agree with you. It's unacceptable to send people 3 miles across town when Hardy is available. And I think it could work. So that's issue one. And number two, yesterday in my meeting with the mayor again, and the acting chancellor was there, reiterated, and he assured me that the renovations at Hyde Addison would be done in a fashion that everything works out well. I mentioned the cafeteria in the basement, and he mentioned that the plans drawn up don't make sense, that the cafeteria is not where you get the food, you know, going on and on. But rest assured, we will work together to make sure that Hyde Addison, when it's done, is a first-class school.
Maybe the parents should just refuse to go to the other school. That's what I would do.
Yeah. And so, again, and you know, nothing's ever done till it's done. Whoever said that, I don't remember. Yogi Bear. And so,
It's not over till it's over.
So make sure you get a big turnout on November 1st.
One more issue. The D.C. United Stadium has hit some snags. Critics say the plans are a far cry from the original concepts that were put forward during the legislative process. What's the issue here?
The issue will be resolved at 1 o'clock today.
Because
when I leave here, I'll be going to meet with the mayor's people and the D.C. United, Jason Levin, and the Anchorage people, Matt Klein, to finally resolve once and for all. What it is it involves access. The original design of the stadium did not include First Street. Anchorage and company and other landowners have property that is down toward the end of Buzzards Point, and you need access from First Street. D.C. United agreed to put First Street back in, but the property owners don't think it's wide enough, and they need more retail on it. So without getting into the weeds on this, this is something we will work out today at 1 o'clock.
Well, here's the weeds on that. Is the initial design they put out for the public was a nice, shiny stadium, first-rate facility, and the one they've done now looks like some kind of practice facility.
Yeah.
It looks horrible.
Yeah. So,
in addition to the access,
yeah.
It looks like it ought to be a B grade thing. It looks like a training facility rather than a place where we can build.
I hadn't heard that before.
Soccer is a terrific sport for this city. It looks terrible. I live near there. I don't think I'll go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're almost out of time, but Miami University of Ohio likes to say we were a university before Miami was a city. And we got this email from Jim in Maryland. Remind the people of the great state of Washington that Washington, D.C. predates the state of Washington by some 89 years.
Right. Yes.
So that's something we all need to remember. Thank you for reminding us about that, Jim. And Tom Sherwood, you know this is our fall membership campaign, so we'll be taking a short break. And when we come back, we will be talking with Ike Leggett. He is the Montgomery County Executive. Tom and I will now take some time to escort Jack Evans from the studio.
Call security.
He never likes to leave. But Jack Evans, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Yes.
Jack Evans
good luck
is a D.C. Council member and chair of the Metro
we'll
Board of Directors. I'm Kojo Nand.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picou and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back to the Politics Hour. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter with NBC4 and a columnist with the Current Newspapers. Our guest is Ike Leggett, the Montgomery County Executive. If you have questions or comments for the Montgomery County Executive, call us at 800-433-8850. Send email to kojowamu.org. Tweet us at Kojo Show, or you can go to our website, kojoshow.org. Watch the live video stream and ask a question or comment there. Isaiah Leggett, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be back.
How many people call you Isaiah anymore?
Only those who are originally from Louisiana, and a few that may know me through at Howard University, but by and large, 99% of people is Ike.
Ike Leggett, the big news this week, Marriott International, a major company employing more than 3,500, will stay not just in Maryland, but will stay in Montgomery County with plans to move to downtown Bethesda. Tell us a little bit about what it took to keep Marriott local.
Well, first of all, let me thank the governor and let me thank the Marriott executives for making what I consider to be a very wise decision. Marriott is an international brand that's located in Montgomery County. It's a very good and strong corporate citizen. It provides a great deal of impact, not just on the economic side, but across the board for Montgomery County and the state of Maryland. We approached this in terms of negotiations that we were not prepared to lose Marriott. And as with any corporation, they're going to look to try to leverage what they have, and certainly they did so. But we approached this from the standpoint of we put a reasonable competitive offer on the table and let them know how much we appreciated what they've done in the state of Maryland and throughout our economy, that ultimately they would make a favorable decision to stay in Montgomery County. And I think that's what we did, and I'm delighted that we got a positive result from it.
How many? What was it? $41 million in incentives?
Or are they, 44
million dollars. Does that come from the county or the state? What's the combination?
That's divided half and half between Montgomery County and the state of Maryland. This is not something that you pay out at one shot. It's something that is really paid out, at least from the county, over a number of years, about $5.5 million over a four-year period, starting in FY 2019.
The economic benefit of this, though, will overshadow that by any X numbers of millions of dollars.
We're talking at $90 million per year just to spin off, just from their location in Bethesda. But in addition to that, we're talking over 3,000 construction jobs to build a $600 million headquarters right in Bethesda. So the economic benefit, in my opinion, far outweighs the incentive that we
have.
How do you make sure that economic benefit is realized? Because this is the second taxpayer-funded incentive packet Marriott has received 20 years ago. The first was supposed to result in 700 new jobs. After 9/11, only about 100 actually materialized. Marriott cut that down. Why do you and Governor Larry Hogan feel confident that this will not happen again?
And in the past, that incentive package was adjusted down as a result of that as well. But in this case, we're talking a firm now that has an additional component to it. It is now the largest hoteler in the entire world with this new acquisition that they've had.
Sure.
In addition to that, in the last arrangement, it was simply a stay at the current headquarters. This is a construction job as well. That's why we believe we would more than exceed the amount that we've talked about.
Bethesda's looking at a new 20-year plan. It's mm-hmm. of 4.5 million square feet of new office space there, or new space. I don't know if it's office or retail, residential.
Combination of all.
Where will this magnificent new Marriott headquarters be built in Bethesda?
Well, we are not trying to indicate precisely which of the sites that they're looking at. They've got three or four sites that they're looking at. My concern as a county executive of Montgomery County is to make certain that all of the sites, and we believe that all of those sites will fit the needs that they want. And the last time I checked, the Bethesda was still in Montgomery County. So long as it's in Bethesda, I'm satisfied.
But people will want to know if it's going to be on Wisconsin Avenue. Is it going to be off on one of the side roads there? I mean,
they will know in sufficient time. They don't actually move until 2022. And so they will make an announcement in the foreseeable future of which of the sites they would ultimately select. But they've decided thus far to concentrate solely on the center of Bethesda.
So they will be again building but not move the headquarters until 2022.
That's correct.
Our guest is Ike Leggett, the Montgomery County Executive. If you have questions or comments for him, give us a call at 800-433-8850. The other big news, you announced last week that you would not be seeking a fourth term, even though you won't use the term retiring. First, what triggered this decision?
Well, I've indicated some time ago that I did not want to run for a fourth term. But if you go back historically, look at this, I said that at the end of the second term that I would not seek a third term. And I indicated very clearly that my wife and I had talked about this, and she was not in favor of a third term. What happened with that was a campaign not directed at me three years ago. It was directed at my wife. And eventually she succumbed to that and said, well, people obviously want you to run again. Why don't you just go ahead and do it? And so I did. She said she's
not going
to
work. So you're saying that can work again?
No, she said it's not going to work.
Well, what do you think you will do? Do you have how old are you?
I'm 71.
71.
Yeah.
And what would you'll stay obviously in the county probably?
Oh, yes, certainly.
You're not going to become a snowbird, go down to Florida stupid things like that, right?
No.
What about working, if it happens, a Clinton administration, would you want to take on something like that? You've been an executive. Do you want to work for somebody?
No, I'm not interested in looking at that. My goals are probably much more modest than that. Probably serving on a number of boards and looking at maybe doing some academic work.
Earn some money?
Not so much. I'm not interested in seeking fame and fortune for money, those kinds of things, but I'm interested in continuing some aspect of public service and maybe doing some academic work.
Montgomery County is changing so dramatically. People mm-hmm. still to this day think, oh, it's kind of the sleepy suburban, mostly white county.
Yeah, like
and it's just
to be a
nothing could be farther from the truth. The changes in Bethesda, the changes in the demographics, the school issues, the road issues. We talked about traffic here. Can I go to traffic? Because I've been fulminating all week about it.
No.
Okay.
he's going to go
well,
to traffic.
Well, it is, in fact, changing. And I think
traffic,
it's changing.
What are you going to do in Bethesda when you put all that new build? How are you going to get traffic through there? It's very difficult even now.
Well, I think one of the advantages we have in the Bethesda area is we have a good connection with Metro. We're going to work out the challenges with the red line. I think that you're going to have a large number of people who are currently commuting into various locations actually living in Bethesda and working in the nearby community. So as a result
where you
that,
work.
As a result of that, you're going to be very close to where you work.
Now, can we, on this issue, one more issue is important for the county. Mm-hmm. The move by Marriott from essentially its office park area to downtown Bethesda is another sign that office parks, in whether they're in Northern Virginia or whether in Montgomery County, are an old idea, a failed idea. They're too isolated. People have to get into a car to get to them. They have to get in a car to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. Do you see this more and more people?
Oh, you're so correct about that. And one of the things that we are doing along with this move is to reposition the existing office parks, such as the ones that we have that Marriott will be abandoned, because they no longer fit the conditions that people obviously want. They want to live, work, and be able to be entertained in a close environment. And so we will look to change the current office park arrangement so that we can make them much more attractive. And we have a plan to do that as well.
You've also said there are a few more things you'd like to accomplish because you've got 2.5 years before your term is up. What is on your priority to-do list during that time?
Well, a combination of things. We are transitioning to a more competitive environment in terms of economic development, and I want to make certain that we get through a number of master plans, especially in the White Oak area. As you've indicated, a great deal of progress in a number of areas in the county, but there's one area in particular that I'm really insistent about that we need to change, and that is the East County. The White Oak area, the area where we have large amounts of traffic, but we do not have the appropriate job and housing mix that I want to see. So we've introduced and signed a plan, an agreement, most recently that would move that project along. So that's one of the major ones for us as well. Affordable housing continue to be a challenge for us, as well as to making certain that we provide the resources to ensure that we close the achievement gaps for our students. So those are some of the things that we're looking at to try to at least move along the next 2.5 years.
Where are you on West Bard? They're off of River Road, that West Bard, the developers pretty much cut it in half. There's still a lot of neighbors who think it's too much Bethesda in a residential neighborhood.
Well, I agree with the county council in his original comments that it needed to be reduced, and they significantly reduced it. There are some neighbors who are still concerned about the process and actually filed a lawsuit as a result of that. But I think the revised plan is much more realistic in terms of how we, in effect, move that project along.
Purple line.
Need to make certain the Purple Line, well, we're still in court with that, so I hope that we can get that resolved as quickly as possible.
A number of council members back to politics could be contenders for the county executive position, and interest could be even higher if, well, a certain referendum passes in November. Term limits are on the ballot in Montgomery County. County council members and the county executive would be barred from serving more than 3 terms. It won't affect you, but you nevertheless think term limits are a bad idea.
I do. I think that when you look at governance, you have a mechanism already in place. You can eliminate people who you don't believe should be in office. And so I think we should apply that. But we would end up with a really short-term aspect of people serving in governance. And I think that it's a bad idea in terms of how you effectively manage and have governments that respond to the needs of the people. There's a great deal of expertise and some very strong people who've served on the county council. And to remove them artificially without going through an elected process of having them stand on the ballot as it relates to those individual seats, I think is the wrong approach.
How do you think it's affected Prince George's County?
I think it has affected. We've lost some very good people in a relatively short period of time. And you end up, unfortunately, with the staffs that are the only permanent stays there for at least for a considerable period of time.
The unelected staff.
Unelected staff. And those people are the people who, in fact, end up with a great deal of the balance of power there. And I think that we will be headed in the same direction.
Who are you supporting for governor in 2018?
Well, there are a number of people who indicated they're running. My good friend Rashawn Baker has indicated that he may run, and also a good friend out of Kamenetz, county executive from Baltimore County. I have not indicated a formal endorsement yet, but I'm certain that I will as we get closer to that time.
It's not going to be you.
No.
Term limits have failed twice in Montgomery County in the past 16 years. Any reason to think it will pass this time?
Well, I think it's more competitive this time because there are some concerns about some of the decisions that were made locally as it relates to taxes. I think that you have generally throughout the entire country today the attitude that we need change, and change sometimes results in people looking at these kinds of conditions. So that presents a very clear indication that people are much more concerned about it and may vote in favor of it. But again, this is a typical Ficker amendment. It's something that he's tried before. He continues to push this along, and people need to be reminded of that. But ultimately, the people will decide in Montgomery County whether or not this should pass or fail. I hope that they will do the right thing and reject it again.
Ficker being the activist, Robin Fichter, who is sponsoring this term limit.
Yeah.
School start times have caused a serious spat between Governor Larry Hogan and Montgomery County school officials. What's going on?
Well, I think that there's a large amount of popularity to do this. I think that you make a decision like this, I think it could have been made to do it in maybe in 2 years so that the local jurisdictions could adjust to it. And I think what you have now with the fact that a number of them have already put out calendars and trying to readjust to it. But it's not something that's not unpopular with people. People really believe that school should start a little bit later, not only in terms of the time of the day, but after Labor Day. But I think that had there been a little bit more notice and they had opportunity to adjust schedules, it would probably have been accepted at a local level as well. But there's a great deal of concern in Montgomery County because it actually squeezes the calendar.
What does the teachers' union want? Does it want to change, or does it like the
system? I'm not sure, because there are a large number of teachers who like this idea. I know that in the past the unions have been against it formally. But when you talk to rank-and-file teachers, a great deal of them want this. But I think, again, when you think about local control, given them the opportunity to have a say in it and to provide this a little bit more leeway, I think you probably have had a win-win all around.
Montgomery County is the state's largest school district. You just implied, but I'll ask outright, do you believe school districts should set their own calendars?
I think they should. But that does not mean that I don't believe that you should start later than after Labor Day. I think that that's a local decision.
Do you want the legislature to overturn what the governor has done?
I'm not
delay it, maybe give it a 2-year period. That would be a compromise.
Yeah, I think that could be a compromise. Yeah.
Right. Here, put on your headphones, please, is Joseph in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Joseph, we only have about a minute and a half left, but go ahead, please.
Thank you, Kojo. You're a monumental person for this county. County Executive, I'm pleased to say that I know you, and I know that you're doing a phenomenal job. I hope that you change your mind, if not for this particular position, for something higher. Having observed you, I feel like there are some people under your administration that perpetuated discriminatory practices in our county. I know that some of them, you can never be aware of everything that goes on. But I would suggest you have some sort of a committee looking into these issues.
Look into the issues of discrimination and the lack of diversity, Ike Leggett. We only have a minute left.
Well, thank you for your question, Joseph. And I believe that we have a very responsive government overall, and that discrimination or issues of discrimination is something that we take very seriously. If there are individual complaints, we have the Office of Human Rights to deal with those. But if there are some particular concerns that you have, I would love to hear them directly in ways in which we can improve the county. Although we are a county that is very diverse, respect people across the board, when you have well over 1 million residents and you have a large bureaucracy, there's always a chance that something may go wrong. So let us know, and I'll be glad to respond.
Afraid that's about all the time we have except for this Tom Show. I think Ike Leggett has a future as a political analyst. What do you think?
Well, not on Fridays at noon.
I think that's a good one. That's a wonderful idea.
Ike Leggett,
we're both Southerners, so I can come in very
easily. That's true.
Ike Leggett, thank you so much for joining us. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter with NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers. Tom, always a pleasure.
Hey, have a good weekend.
That's
go
it for
vote,
the show
people
today.
On Saturday.
Before we go, a big thank you to everyone who's given over the course of this last week while we've been in the midst of our fall membership campaign. As Tom Sherwood says, local Washington is only as good as the people active in it. And we do what we do on this show with the hope and belief it will be of value to you. And we can do it because of your support. So please become a member now. And thank you. And be sure to meet us back here Monday at noon. We'll be talking about why some in the African-American community are concerned about a possible right to die law coming to D.C. Plus, newly minted MacArthur fellow Joyce J. Scott on pushing boundaries in art and in life. That's all coming up Monday at noon. Until then, have a wonderful weekend, and thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from University of Maryland University College, offering bachelor's and master's degrees for today's in-demand careers. Learn more about how they can help advance your career at umuc.edu. And from JK Moving Services, assisting corporations and government agencies with specialized commercial moving and asset management, including PC tech services, records managing, document imaging, and document destruction. jkmoving.com/worryfree. And from the Sanju K. Bansal Foundation, dedicated to helping people help themselves through improved access to information.
Allie Schweitzer here from WAMU 88.5 News. Because the music, arts, and culture scene in D.C. is so inventive and energetic, WAMU is committed to keeping you in the know on the eclectic happenings in our region. Lately, all of the music you hear in WAMU's local breaks has been taken over by the locals, and we call it Capital Soundtrack. New and innovative projects like this are made possible by backers like you. Please donate now to support this and all of your favorite sounds at WAMU.org. Thanks.
Welcome back. The final day of our fall membership campaign. I'm Ingalisa Schrobstorff, one of the producers with the Kojo Namdi Show and the Politics Hour. I'm here with Joel Costello from our membership team. And as we just heard Allie Schweitzer say, she was talking about some of the great initiatives underway here at WMU. You've probably heard some of this on our air. If you're wondering where your money goes, we've been steadily building up our newsroom to make sure we're not just covering press conferences, but that we're going deeper on the issues important to you. There's the Big Listen, the broadcast about podcasts. A lot of people love that show. It just went national. Kudos there. Anacostia Unmapped has been bringing you stories and people you don't hear on the air every day, and Capital Soundtrack highlighting local music on our air. Those are just some of the reasons that we're hoping you will donate now, and here's how to do it.
And you can do it by giving us a call at 800-248-8850 or go to WAMU.org. It's quick. It's easy. You just, when you go to WAMU.org, you just fill out your name, your address, choose an amount you'd like to give, and that's entirely up to you. Maybe $5 a month, might be $10 a month, and maybe $20 a month. While you're there, you could check out all of the really cool thank you gifts we have available. We have some new ones this time. For $12 a month, we have a pint glass. And Matt McCluskey actually helped come up with the slogan for it. It says News on Tap. It's this really cool red graphic, kind of retro looking. It says News on Tap, and that's our gift to you when you donate $12 a month or more. Or you can get two of those for a $20 a month donation at WAMU.org. And I just want to update you quickly on our goal. All we have left is $8,000. And I'm happy to say that we have a member match right now. So this $8,000 will be matched dollar for dollar. Thank you to current, generous current members who have pooled their money together to encourage you to become a member right now by doubling the impact of your gift and matching it dollar for dollar. So the $100 donation will be worth $200 only when you donate right now at WAMU.org or 800-248-8850.
I want to talk a little bit about first-time donors. Maybe you've heard someone call in to the Diane Rehm Show or the Kojo Show and say, I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. If you are a longtime listener but not yet a member, now's the time to become that first-time donor. We're asking you to turn that listening habit into membership. We heard Grace from Grace in Arlington who told us that her radio has one setting. She says, so much of my news comes from NPR. It was a shock to see what the presidential candidates looked like at the debate, which we loved. And Marion Woodbridge said, I listen to you guys anytime I'm driving. I always learn something new. What we do is only possible with your support. Online, WMU.org or 800-248-8850.
800-248-8850 or online at WAMU.org. And when you go to WAMU.org, you fill out that form. You put in your personal information, choose a gift amount, choose a thank you gift. And then at the bottom of the form, there's a comment section that says, tell us the reasons that you give to WAMU. We may read it on the air. So we hope that you will fill out those comment sections. We have had such a great time reading these comments on the air all week. Like Ariana in Clinton, Maryland, she says her reason for donating is, I have the biggest crushes on Kai and Kojo. And then she says, but seriously, it's awesome programming. And Estelle in Arlington says, WAMU is my number one news source. It feels like home. And Lee, who also is in Washington, D.C., says, WAMU keeps me company and helps me feel informed during my scooter ride to work each day.
Scooter ride?
I know.
That's
that sounds so cool.
I'm not sure how she does that. Probably from a podcast headphone situation.
Yeah. But. So thanks to Lee and Estelle and Ariana. We hope you will join them. Help us make this match goal when you go to WAMU.org or call 800-248-8850.
You know, our guests on the Kojo Show and the Politics Hour often comment after the show that it's so refreshing to have a real discussion, to be able to give context and explain things in depth. Given that we live in a 140-character world, and so often our news is cut down to sound bites that don't give the full picture, people really appreciate that we do give that context and that analysis that you need to make sense of the news. If that's why you listen, support the Kojo Show, the Politics Hour, and all the other great programs here on WAMU. Easy to do, takes just a minute. If you're about to go out to lunch on this beautiful fall day, takes just a minute. Jump online, WAMU.org, or 800-248-8850.
A few $1,000 left to go in this hour to meet that goal that will be matched dollar for dollar. About 2 minutes left to do it. 800-248-8850 or WAMU.org. Oh, I'm getting an update from Lenny Holman, who's awesome. Thank you. And left on our goal, $1,938, which will still be matched dollar.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at WAMU.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.